Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and do I have a treat for you today. That's right. You remember the neighborhood? How much we all like the neighborhood guys, right? Sitting around talking with fellas, have all different life experiences and talking about what they like to do and what they think of the world and everything. Well, COVID kind of put the kibosh on that for a while. We had all the guys were, you know, separated to different continents of the United States and the world, and they couldn't be on the show. But today I flew him in from Australia. Today we have Bill, the man of faith, Dallas with us. He's back. Now, why was Bill in Australia? I don't know. Some weird thing about kangaroos. I don't know. I don't ask questions, and you shouldn't either. Bill, welcome back.
Greetings, mates.
Oh, I see you picked up the lingo.
Yeah.
Well, Bill, the reason I'm glad you're on today, because I have had a lot of emails and I've had a lot of text messages and stuff from people over the last year who really like the neighborhood guys. They really enjoy that segment. Mm-hmm. And it's fun because, you know, everybody's got different points of view, different opinions. Everybody's got all these different personalities. And it's been tough for me not having you guys be able to come on. Now, we tried the Zoom recording and this and that, and that's not the same as sitting in the same room mm-hmm. together. So that's why I'm glad you're here. So I want to just kind of reconnect with everybody, you know, remind everybody about what's important to you in life. Have you been surviving the COVID thing? You know, where do you see the future going? Are you optimistic? Or what do you think about it? So just give everybody a hi, how are you?
Wow.
Tell them who you are again, Billy.
Hi, how are you? That's a big load to bear. You know, you're asking me one question with 30 answers.
That's, I sound like an attorney, don't I?
Yeah, right. Well,
so how'd you do in COVID?
I'm still dealing with it. If the right thing to do to get the vaccine or not, or hydroxychloroquine. Yeah. You know what? If I can't say it, I'm not going
to
take it.
You probably shouldn't take it. Although, I don't know, I'm sure you've been listening to the show. Kathleen's been on a few times, and she has done a lot of research, because we're fighting with that thought, too. We're trying to decide, do we take the vaccine, not take the vaccine? It's experimental. So if something goes wrong, you can't sue anybody because it's an expert. You sign off that you're willing to take this thing. Our kids have to take it to go to school, so we don't know where we are. But we did manage to get ourselves some hydroxychloroquine, and we have that from our doctor. If we need it, we'll take it.
Yeah. Dolores, my wife and I did the same. We also have it in case we get those symptoms. And you know what? Like you said, it's experimental. We have something to kind of help if it warrants it.
Right.
But I'm still debating the vaccine.
And right.
My wife is right now, she doesn't feel like we should take it. And I don't either.
Right.
At this point.
Right. I don't think so either. Me personally, because you know what? I'm healthy. I'm in good shape. I feel good. I take care of myself. I take a lot of vitamins, which we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But the reality is, because I don't know, it's a small chance that something will happen to you. They've given, 100 million shots now? And mm-hmm. we have tens of thousands of people who have had a bad reaction. Now, that's bad. If you're one of those tens of thousands of people that either die from the vaccine, or what people don't always understand is you might not die, but you might have major medical effects from it. There are people who have blindness, have paralysis, all kinds of problems based on the vaccine.
Blood clots and things like that. And I'm in that class of people. I'm going to be 75, and I mean, yeah, no, what am I saying? 74.
74.
In a couple of weeks.
Yeah, don't give up another year.
You know, and I could have gotten it when it first came out, mm-hmm. but, you know, I'm so hesitant about things that are experimental.
Well, that's the problem, you know. Here's what I said. Having this conversation, we're talking about it. And it comes down to basic things. Your chances of being okie dokie are mostly in your favor. You'll probably mm-hmm. be okay. Unless you're one of those people who are not okay. Then you have to deal with that. Now, at 74, you know, if you had a complication of blood clots, if somebody knew about it, if they knew you were having a problem, they could probably give you blood thinners and clean you out and you'd be okay.
Sure.
Because there are people that have those blood clots and that's what they do. They give them anticoagulants. But if you didn't, you sat at home for 3 days and then one of them hits your lung or your brain, boom, you're dead. And everybody says, what happened? Oh, Bill died. He's 74. Well, you know that. No, he died from the vaccine. We just don't know. And, but I don't know either. You know, traveling for business, right now there is no passport that you have before you can get on an airplane. They can't demand that you be vaccinated. But if they want to, they can. And I think our government, our Joe Biden government, is going that way because that's replacement for the mask is the passport. Now they can control you that way.
Yeah, I feel like they're leaning towards that as well. And that's the thing that scares me, you know, because my son is in Florida. And right now we're debating, I'm going to be retiring July 1st from my full-time job. I've been with him 44 years, and it's about time I got away from all the business and stuff. And I want to travel. I want to go down and see my son. But if they do this passport thing, then that decision is made for me. You know, I have to get the shot.
Or you can drive. And do you want to drive at 75? Take 4 days to get down, 4 days
yeah,
to get
no,
home?
No, I don't think so.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I say. Kathleen and I, again, we were talking about it, and she's like, listen, if they tell you have to have it for work, don't get it. Don't get it. And you can drive to Las Vegas if you have to go there for a trade show or something. I said, I'm not driving to Las Vegas from New Jersey and driving back. I'm not doing that. You know, if it comes down to it, I'm going to have to get the shot, then I'll probably have to get the shot. The odds seem to be in the favor of people who are taking it, that nothing bad's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But once again, I don't want to be that guy that has that problem.
Well,
you know?
At 74, I want to spend my remaining years visiting my grandkids, you know, my daughter. Well, we've got two here. And the father of my grandkids, he just got the shot. And he works in healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
He got the...
Which one? Moderna or...
No.
Pfizer?
Pfizer. He got the Pfizer, and he's fine. But he's a young guy, and you know he is constantly going. He travels. He, you know, was back and forth to New York. So it's important for him to get the shot.
Well, that's interesting. It's important for him to get the shot. For what reason? To protect his health because it really works, or is it important to get his shot so he's allowed to participate in society? That's the difference.
Both. You know, he works for he's a financial advisor, and he works for a major company. I don't want to say anything about him, but and like I said, he travels a lot, and he's got to be protected because he goes into a lot of places.
Right.
And you know, he's got two kids, and I'm thinking, if he has to do stuff like that, somewhere down the road, I'm going to have to do the same thing.
And I think that's, people feel an inevitability about this. That's kind of how I'm feeling about it. You know, it kind of feels inevitable. But are they pushing us into it? Is it really the right thing? Is it really necessary? Or, you know, is it not? You know, our bishop here at church, you know, we were very upset with the church and the things that, the way they treated it. You know, here's all these... all our sacraments and getting together, and this is the most important thing in the world, and they closed down the churches. And our officials were perfectly okay with that. Like, how come you weren't out in the parking lot doing confession? How come you weren't out in the parking lot giving out communion? Why weren't you serving the community? You know, back in the plague, they didn't stop doing church. But this time they did. And the bishop went and got the shot. I think he got the Johnson & Johnson one. I'm not sure, but that's what they said in the newscast. And he had clots, blood clots, and he had to go to be rushed to the hospital. Now, he's an older guy. He's in his 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And he got blood clots, but apparently he's okay and he'll be coming home because they caught it in time and they can give you anticoagulants and they can help you just like any kind of blood clot. But I don't know if that's something I really want to be a part of, but I may have to be.
Yeah. I just, to be pushed into something like this is, it kind of irks me.
Yeah,
I don't want to be forced to make a decision.
Right. And that's the problem. If they said it was completely optional, because first of all, let's look at it this way. You got vaccinated, so you're perfectly safe. If I didn't get vaccinated because I chose not to and I get an airplane with you, somebody else who might have COVID could give it to me, but they couldn't give it to you. You got the vaccination. Or it doesn't really work, then why are we doing all this?
Along with that, what about this new app you put on your phone that will tell you the person that you're speaking to will either have the COVID or not, if that person has the same app? And it's something that's put out by the Department of Health.
Now, how the hell does an app know if I have a germ floating around in my blood?
That I...
Because my phone doesn't have
a breath sensor.
It can't do a DWI test. Yeah. So how the hell does it know? Elevated temperature, maybe?
I don't know, Joe. It's baffling. But it's something that you put on your phone, and it'll tell you if... Joe sitting next to me here. Oh, he's got the COVID. Yeah,
that's ridiculous. I can't believe that.
I wouldn't believe it if it wasn't put out by the health department.
Because they would never lie.
No, of course not.
Of course they would never lie. They're part of government. Government wouldn't lie to you. Let's bring up Mr. Fauci, Dr. Fauci.
Oh, gosh.
He wouldn't lie, would he? You seen all the emails that this guy not only does he contradict himself in public every 2 seconds?
I've now seen some of them.
His emails are horrific. This guy. I get that, you know, I thought I gave him the benefit of the doubt. I think he's a medical guy. He really wants to help people. When you see all the lies that came out from his emails, how do we trust another word that this guy says? Why is he still there? Why isn't he replaced by somebody like a Dr. McCullough, who was who was here on America Out Loud not too long ago? Dr. McCullough, that I had spoken about, brilliant guy. I think he's a virologist and a physician, and he's the one who talked about having ivermectin and the hydroxychloroquine, that if you start to feel bad, take those two things and you'll either stop the virus or you'll knock it out of you. And why aren't we talking about him? So I think we covered the COVID, okay? This has been interesting. But how did you feel going through this mentally? How was the lockdown for you? Was that difficult? I mean, you went to work, right? You went to work every day?
I went to work for a while. But then it got to be a point where, you know, I'm bringing stuff home, and I want to see my grandkids. Mm-hmm. I don't want to give them anything. So I called up the owner of my company and I told him, I said, look, I'm going to have to retire because I can't stay on the road and keep doing this. And then he said, well, look, we need you on the road, but, well, all things considered, work from home. Call your customers, keep in touch with them, and we'll just ride with it that way for a while.
Well, that's good.
And they were good about it. I still got paid. I was able to spend time with my wife, and I was able to, you know, see my grandkids once in a while. But I got more work than I had anticipated.
Yes.
Working from home.
I'll tell you, I think that's what everybody found, is that I think the feeling in the past, prior to COVID, working from home was considered a get over. You're going to work from home. You're not really going to work. You're going to get up late. You're not going to show up at the office at 8 o'clock ready to go. You're going to come online at 9:30. You're going to be on the phone, right? And I kind of thought the same thing. And then when we were forced to go to this work from home, I never worked so much in all my life. I mean, I start with the emails at 5:36 in the morning because I'm awake. Yep. So I start looking at my emails. I start answering them, where before I would wait till I got to the office and start doing things. Then I'm talking to people. They're emailing me back. Then I'm awake. I have my coffee sitting at the computer, and I start working, and the projects start coming in. I'm doing the next thing I know, it's 6 o'clock at night, and Kathleen would say to me, hey, it's 6 o'clock. You're going to stop now? And I'm like, I still got more things to do, you know, and it was a Saturday. I get up on Saturday. Let me come just to check a few weeks. Next thing you know, I'm working more. And I think we found that a lot of people found that working from home was, there's a lot more work if you took it seriously.
Mm. Well, my original agreement with my owner was that I would work 3 days a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And when I started working from home, all of a sudden I'm working 5 days a week. 12 hours a day.
Right.
And, you know, I do a lot with the military and the government. And these guys, the military, they're up at 5. I'm getting calls at 5:30 in the morning.
Right.
And, you know, nothing has changed except there is more.
There's more, right. Which is funny. So now as COVID starts to break down, as we start to have, they figure about 100 million people had the real COVID. So they have an immunity now. And 100 million people got shots. That leaves 130 million people who were kind of in between. You know, we're almost at herd immunity here. Do you think the world's going to go back? Are we going to go back to the cities? Are we going back into these two-hour commutes both ways and working in an office? And I'm a business owner. I'm in New York City, and I'm going to pay $1 million a year in rent. Or let everybody work from home, and I'll have a little office in Sheboygan or something where we can meet if we have to. What do you think?
I don't know. I know one thing, that all of the people that are at home and doing all their shopping online, that's going to remain. I mean, all of the big warehouses and stuff like that, Amazon and Costco and all of them, they're not going to give that up. That's easy money for them.
Sure. I'll tell you, it's convenient. We have the guy come every day with something. We belong to one of their groups. If you pay an extra $50 a year or whatever, you get free shipping on everything. Yeah. So Kathleen will go on, I need a battery. Boom, it's here the next day. Or she'll say, I need a wing nut for a boat. It's here the next day. Whatever we want, it's a click of a button away. We just cleaned out my pool and I put in the liner again, cleaned it all out, and the liner split open. Right, so I look, I can't believe it. So we go online and I can get a brand new liner, better than the one I got, for a ridiculously good price. And it says it'll be here Tuesday. Like, are you kidding me? That's how fast these things can happen. So I think you're right about that. That's not going away. Brick and mortar stores, malls.
Yeah.
Interesting thing I saw about a mall. There's a group. Where was it? I heard them the other day. They were talking about it, how they can utilize these malls for something, the property, because you don't want to put a store there. Who the heck's going to go to malls anymore? That's kind of gone, but they're putting other kind of businesses in the malls, which might be interesting. Now, one of the things, Bill, I got to tell you, since you guys have been out of town for a while, and down in Australia with your kangaroo farm, whatever you're doing down there, I don't know. I got to tell you, when it comes to being healthy, we have there's a sponsor on America Out Loud. And Healthy Cell is the name of this company. And originally, the great Malcolm Out Loud had told me about it. He said he was their vitamins. There's two kinds of things they make, an immune boost, super immune boost, and then they make another one for better sleep, right? And Malcolm says, I'm taking these. They're really good. You should try them. And I trust the guy. I like him. I like to take supplements and vitamins because I don't always eat right. I'm trying to eat right, but, doing low-carb dinner, and then you're not doing this, and then, whatever. So I said, I'd love to try it. So I was going to get it, and they sent me some here. And I'll tell you, I've been taking them for a couple weeks, and I've been telling people about it each week in the show. I actually do feel better. If I really do. I feel stronger. I feel like I'm up at 5:30, and normally I'm going to bed, I'm going to bed at 9:30. I'm drifting. Now I'm up till 10:30, 11. I feel more alert. And I'm trying to say, make an honest analysis. Is it really from taking, the Healthy Cell, or is it that it's like a placebo effect? And now after 3 weeks, I have to say I really feel a difference. And what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to stop taking it for a week and see how I feel. And then, I'll go back. And I'm trying to make a good analysis, but it seems pretty good. This is, I showed you this little package, right? I don't know what to call it, a gel, but you open it up, it's blackberry flavored, and you can mix it with stuff. Or you can take it straight. I take it straight, like I just did when you saw me take it. I suck it down because it tastes pretty good. It says blackberry flavor. I really enjoyed it. So I would suggest, you give it a try. And if anybody out there in the Chasing Justice family, if you're thinking about supplements or something, give this Healthy Cell a try. It's on the station. You can hear the ads all over the place. Give them a try because I actually do feel different, and we all want to be healthy in this day and age, right? Okay. So, Billy, since the COVID has taken us out, we've had an election. Now, normally, the guys in the neighborhood, we would sit around the campfire and we would talk about politics once in a while. Mm-hmm. We have diverse opinions. And then we have Jim. Jim, the contrary. Jim, the contrarian Giordano, was going to come today, but he had to do something this afternoon. It was kind of important with his family, so we're going to forgive him. Rock and roll race car Jack also similarly had some very important family things to do. Now that the world's opening up, people now are going to see people and they're taking care of people in person. So, what do you think about the election in general? First of all, let's go to the main thought here. Do you think the election was stolen? Or do you think Joe Biden legitimately won? People said, enough with Trump and all the winning. We want to go back to Obama era. What do you think?
There's no question it was stolen. I mean, come on. Just looking at Biden and just his physicalness is beyond imaginable that he can handle world issues and do the things that Trump did. Trump was out there every day campaigning. He was out there talking to the foreign governments. He was every day. I mean, he had more energy. He must have been taking your immune booster or whatever. Because
he probably was.
This guy, it was incredibly active. Where Biden, he was hiding in the basement all the time.
Even now, do you see his schedule, Joe Biden? He has one event a day, usually. That's it, one presidential event a day. And so you think it was stolen. How do you think it was stolen? What do you think happened? How do they steal an election?
These ballot machines, I forget what the name of the company is, but they had to be messed with. Because there is no way, if you look at all of the different the differences in the counts now, I mean, I'm talking about currently, that they're going back and recounting and they're finding more and more. They're finding that people have counted more, voted more than once. They've used people's names that have been dead for 10 years. And it's been incredible at all the different investigations that they've come up with have pointed to the fact that it was a stolen election. Trump, it galls me to say this, but I think he gave up too easy. He just, you know, he fought for a while, but he didn't really continue.
Well, I agree, and I felt the same way. But at the same time, the man stood alone for the entire 4 years. He did not have a lot of help from his own party. He had some people who finally came on board in year two or so. But until that, for the first couple of years, they all seemed to think, hey, he really did collude, and we're going to prove it. He's going to get thrown out. You know, he upset the apple cart for all of them, because I don't mean every single one. There are some good, decent politicians on both sides of the aisle. But for the most part, it's a game for them. They get in and they get money. They get in and they get money. They sell their vote. They get in and they sell their influence. And Trump got in there and he upset that apple cart. I think everybody knows that. But he was all alone fighting this battle. When it came down to the end and they saw that he lost, I think both sides, the anti-Trumpers, the Democrats and everybody, said, here's our chance. You lost. Get out. And they're threatening him now with lawsuits, or not lawsuits, but legal cases. They're going to try and indict him for his businesses in New York. They're going after him in other places. Criminal. They're going after him with criminal stuff.
That's because they don't want him to run in the next election. Because they know that if he does, he's going to win.
How's he going to win if they steal it again? How's he going to win if they steal it again?
No, that's not going to happen again.
Why?
They're going to make sure that the votes are counted in a way that there's not going to be any messing around.
Who's going to make sure of that?
That's a good question.
So the Detroit Council is going to make sure that every vote is counted, and in Michigan they're going to do the right thing, and in Georgia now that they've been taken over, and in all these blue states, they're going to do the right
thing. If there's a Democrat in charge, no, it's not going to work. But
now let's talk about that at a better level, because
excuse me if I'm prejudiced, but looking at all the different governors and the mayors of the cities where all these riots and things are happening, and they're defunding the police and pushing them aside, they're all Democrat.
Right.
All these cities are Democrat run that are having problems. And you look at places like Florida with DeSantis, and you know, things are not as problematic there.
Yeah. You can look across the country, and that's always been the case. You know, it's unfortunate that we see this happen, that there are so many of our fellow citizens that live in these blue states that suffer, you know, high taxes, overregulation, crime. You look at the crime that's going on, and is anybody trying to stop the crime, or are they allowing more crime? They're allowed, you know, there's no bail thing. Now, I get it. Bail is supposed to ensure that you show up to court. It's not supposed to hold you in jail as a punishment because you've been charged with something, because you're innocent until proven guilty. Mm-hmm. And I get, if you got locked up today, Bill, you would be able to make bail and get out and go home. But if somebody who's really economically deprived gets arrested, they're going to go sit in jail for 6 or 7 months. I get that. But when it comes to these violent crimes, you know, that's a thing where we have to decide, what are we doing here to protect ourselves from violent crime? And these cities are out of control.
You know, it all started with the police not allowing to strike back when these punk kids in the cities were hitting them with buckets of water. Now, they were told to stand down from that. Now, by rights, they should have been arrested. But their leadership was told, no, leave them alone. Why?
Right.
That's where it escalated there.
Right, because then people see they don't have to, they don't, and it's not fear the police. It's respect authority, right? The police are not just people running around doing things. You have to respect the authority that's out there.
Well, look at what happened in Baltimore with the mayor of Baltimore. That city was totally on fire. I mean, it was riots after riots after riots, and the mayor told the police, "Let them alone."
Let them get it out of their system.
Yeah.
Now, when you say that to people, that emboldens people to commit crimes, to commit more crimes, because there's no penalty for your actions. There's nothing to hold you back.
But look at what they're doing. Seriously, they're breaking into stores and looting. Now, how is that justify their cause? It does nothing to bring about a social justice.
Right, to say, okay, historically there's been problems that need to be addressed. Like I'm talking about the bail thing. It does need to be addressed. Yeah. But at the same time, just letting anybody who's been arrested for anything go in, process them, and kick them out the door. Well, this was, you know, back in the day, the whole idea of the broken windows theory was that if you stop people when they're doing something small, you put them in the system, you get a hold of them early, you might defer some of them from committing further crimes. But if you know who those people are and you hold them to account, if you protect everybody from the broken windows in a community, then there won't be bigger crimes. And that's how you start to develop. Now you have everybody's fingerprints if you need them for crime scenes. And I know a lot of my civil libertarian friends say, we don't want the government having our fingerprints or our blood. You know what? They're out there everywhere. And this is how we solve crime, right? Unless you're going to be a criminal, you don't have to worry about that. They have your fingerprints on.
Right.
Unless, of course, they want to fake up a charge and say your fingerprints are there. Now, you don't think the FBI would do a thing like that, do you? You don't think they would make stuff up. Speaking of that, isn't there an investigation we're due somewhere along the lines? Wasn't there a big investigation that was going to come out last summer, and then it was going to come out right before the election? And then, well, we can't do it right before the election. That wouldn't seem right. It'll have to be before Christmas and then after New Year. And here it is, almost the summer of the next year and a half. And is that investigation still ongoing, or has that been shut down and told to go away?
Most people, I'd say 99% of the people, if you ask that question, they would say, what are you talking about?
Right. That's over and gone.
What investigation?
Right. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. When you're saying the next election, they're not going to. Who the hell is there that are not going to allow this to happen again? And you know what? If they do it again, they steal the election. Right. If we take your premise that it was stolen, now they go to four other states and they steal those four states. Well, who is there that's going to step in? The courts wouldn't step in. The courts didn't want to get political. Mm. Instead of just going, we have to look and see if laws were violated, the courts, we don't want to get political, so we'll stay out. Right? Kind of ridiculous, and we're all suffering the consequence of it now. So I have said this many times. I don't know that it was stolen. It seemed that there was enough smoke that you would think there was a fire. So you know what you do when you see that? You investigate. You go back. Look at all the places now that they're doing recounts. Maricopa County and a lot of places in Michigan and Georgia. They're recounting, and people are fighting tooth and nail to prevent the counts. Why? Why wouldn't it be better to come out and go, listen, all you idiots that think Trump really won, guess what? Here's the recount. It was done properly, and Biden won by a landslide. Mm-hmm. So shut up. Wouldn't that be the thing to do?
That would be
then
it.
Everybody would lick their wounds and go, you know what? I guess people really did want to go back to the left. They wanted to go back to the high tax and regulation policies, and we lost. But instead, they say there's 30 or 40 million people who, to this day, are convinced that it was stolen, like yourself. How do they rectify those feelings in you that you're going to trust anything?
It's just a gut feeling.
Yep.
Because there is nothing that I could say. I can't point to a news article. I can't point to any legislation. I can't point to anybody's testimony. But I know in my heart that election was totally illegitimate.
Well, what do they say when there was a whistleblower? Remember the whistleblower, one whistleblower?
Yeah.
And we had to shut the whole country down and listen to the whistleblower. Well, how about people gave affidavits that they saw funky things during the election? And do we give those whistleblowers the same credibility? We do not. Mm-hmm. Now, Bill, I don't want to cut you off because you're on fire here. You're back from Australia. You're pretty good. You got, what do they call that? That stuff that they eat. Vegemite. You got your Vegemite sandwich here. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a minute with more Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Bangaro.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds. 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology, designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
It was a vision that gave birth to a unique multimedia platform that would combine classic talk radio, great writers, and memorable podcasts and videos. AmericaOutloud.com is a conservative leader in a field that is predominantly run by far-left progressive globalists. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome back to Chasing Justice. Lieutenant Joe Pangaro here with my good friend and the man from the neighborhood, Bill, the man of faith, Dallas. So what we talked about recently, Bill, was I said that, and I don't want to reprise the entire show, but I think you have some information to talk about here is important. The distinction between the conservative point of view in governance and the liberal point of view in governance is laid bare when we see the things that the Biden administration is doing compared to, say, the Trump administration, which really was a conservative government as opposed to all these rhinos that were liberal or conservatives before. What we thought was conservatism was actually rhino-based type of conservatism. And one of the things that I had said, it seems clear to me, all these anti-Trumpers, you know, even to this day, this Liz Cheney is out there screaming and hollering at the top of her lungs that she will do everything in her power to make sure Trump never gets anywhere near. If she fought that hard against Joe Biden policies, if she would fight that hard against these liberal things that they're doing with taxing and opening the borders and everything else that's causing all these problems, if she would fight that hard against those things, she would be a hero to conservatives and Republicans. But she's not. She's like that Mitt Romney. You know, it's like, what did God say? You know this thing in the Bible. He goes, you know, if you're like, you're lukewarm, I'd rather spit you out than have you around, right? That's what these rhinos are. They're lukewarm. They don't fight. And they all say the same thing. We don't get why these people like Trump. He is so this. He is so that. Okay, well, the tweeting has stopped and the country has turned upside down. Your taxes are about to go through the roof. Your gasoline, which is a real tax on you, is now up at least $1 a gallon everywhere. It's going even further. Oil heating is going to go crazy next year. We're seeing all these problems based on policy, policy, policy. So, Bill, when you see this, one of the things that I think we're seeing on day one, Joe Biden came in and did what? He overturned how many things that Trump had put in place.
I think he got writer's cramp from all the times he signed his name on these things, and there was just a stack. I couldn't tell you how many. It was well over 100. I know that. He was just...
Executive orders that he just overturned. Yeah. Now, remember every time Trump... Now, executive order. Let's be clear on what an executive order is. When you're the executive of your state or whether you're the executive of the country, you have to have certain abilities to use power, right? To use power to get things done in an emergent kind of a way that you can't wait for... for the legislature to get together and wrestle it around and wait to see who's going to pay them the most to decide which side of the aisle they are on or whatever. The executive of any organization has to have the ability to make decisions and make things happen right away. So we see this in the Presidential War Powers Act. Somebody does something to us in America, we can't wait around for the Congress to get together and decide and debate it. Is it a good thing? Who's getting paid by that country? They don't want to fight them, whatever it is. And I keep throwing that in there because I'm really annoyed with all these people. But the reality, the president has to be able to say, launch the rockets and go get them. We have to have an immediate thing, and then we can sit back and figure it out later. Well, an executive has to have the same power, whether you're running a company or a country. And we saw when Donald Trump became president, his absolute right as president is to go in and revoke all the previous presidential executive orders. That's what he can do because they were only good for that president. New one comes in, makes new ones. And how many times did he get sued and the courts sided with Obama executive orders as though they were law? You can't get rid of the DACA people. That's an executive order, and that's what we think, that's a good one. So basically, you've given the power of law to an executive order if the courts uphold it and say the new president can't undo it. Well, this guy went in, and like you said, 100? He undid 100 things?
I think it was 127 the first day.
Were there any lawsuits? Did any Republican get out of their chair and say, I disagree with that? Or did they just go right along with it and bend over and grab their ankles and go, well, he won the election. Trump's not here to tweet anymore. I mean, I don't get it. Where's the fight? Where's the fight? There is no fight. There's no fight. That's the problem.
Yeah. I think Trump's only real target when he first came in was Obamacare. He wanted to get rid of that.
Right. Oh, yeah. And weren't there like tons of Republicans, the majority of Republicans who said, put a bill on the desk and we're going to get, and they voted yes a million times when they were out of power that they would vote to get rid of it. They get into power, Trump gets the, well, no, I'm not going to do it. Not really. I just wanted to say I would do it. I don't really want to do it.
Oh,
man. This is sickening. This is sickening because we could get together with our friends on the left. We can figure out things that both of us think are important. That's how you work a country when you have 300 million people and 150 million believe one thing and 150 million believe another. You get together and you say, where can we connect and how do we make this happen? What's important to you, Bill? What's important to me? And then we make it work. The fact that we have nothing. These people are just sitting there doing nothing, and the Democrats are doing whatever the heck they want. They have a 50-50 Senate, and they're running it like it's 90-20 because they get everything they want.
You know, the one thing that sticks in my mind when you say the Democrats just do whatever they want, and it's like nobody can do anything about it. Why not? Look at the latest thing, which really galls me. Lori Lightfoot, the
mayor of Chicago.
She refused an interview because the reporter was white. She said, I'm not taking any appointments with white people. I want people of color to take my interviews.
Right.
So, and nobody's doing anything about that.
Nobody even says that that's wrong.
Oh, my God.
You know what they say? Here's what's changed. Where before, we all agreed that there were some problems and things were wrong and we should probably fix them. It's probably a good idea to figure out how to fix them. Now they're going, it's payback time, and we're going to go payback. Never mind, everything should be right. Now it's payback time, and people are doing like things like that. In the past, if anybody had said, I'm only going to interview with a certain race of people and I'm going to exclude other races, that would have been earth-shattering in our country, but not today. Today it's looked like, well, she has a right to do that because things were wrong in the past, so therefore I don't blame her for doing that.
Yeah.
But it's crazy, because where does that lead? Just like letting crime run wild in the streets, by not saying that something is bad like that, you're asking for more of it. And the more people just acquiesce and say, well, I guess that's okay. I can understand why she would feel that way. No, this is the future. We have to live what we say is the best way to be. We have to understand the past, but we don't go backwards. And now we're now it's payback time. We're going to do all the things that you did and got away with. Now we're going to do it. Well, what does that happen to everybody? And this is my point of my last couple shows, was that at some point, this turns into, Bill, what I believe, and you tell me, this turns into people like yourself who really care about being fair, being just, doing the right thing. When you get spit at a million times and punched in the face, even though you've lived a life of doing the right thing, and now you're going to be attacked, kind of makes people go like, you know what, I'm done with that now. I'm just going to live my life. I don't care what happens to anybody else. Do you think so?
These are the people who have been passive most of their life because things have been working out. Their lives are maybe not great, but they're okay. They're making money. They have a house. They don't have to be rich. They just have to be, you know, make ends meet. And, you know, save a little bit of money. But these are also the people who now, they're the ones that are applying for gun permits. These are the people that are buying gold. These are the people that are stocking up food for when the end times come or whatever. These are the people that have been passive far too long, and now it's up to a point where it's almost too late for
right.
them.
Right.
Because they have this wrong way of thinking. These are the ones that should have been raising their hands and saying, we got to put a stop to this. But no, these are the people that sat back and waited until someone else took the first step. We can't do that anymore.
Right.
We can't let someone else fight our battles.
If we maintain this leftward lurch, it's not even a lurch now. Now it's a full steam ahead to the
yeah.
left, to socialism. There's no doubt about it. There's no stopping it right now. There's no Republican that's going to stop it. There's no Democrat that's going to stop it. Everybody scream, oh, wait till the 2022 elections. We are going to wipe them out. And people are so sick of what he's doing. Really? I don't believe it, because first of all, they might steal it. Number two, I don't really believe that. We might be a leftward lurch country now. That might be the reality. And that means that what elections have consequences, and that's what you get. But let me ask you, if that continues, do you think it's sustainable? A guy who's been here 74 years on the planet, do you think that's sustainable, that people just going to take this and not boil over? Or what do you think is going to happen?
What's happened in the socialist countries now, to date? Look at Argentina, how they succumbed to that left-wing theory about, you know, Marxism and socialism and all this other stuff. I mean, the things start in the schools, educating our children, because even now I have young people that I talk to, because I'm involved with vocational schools and I do peer-to-peer counseling and mentoring. And Most of these kids are have been taken in by this, you know.
Right.
They're
true believers of it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They think Biden was the greatest thing ever.
Because he's going to make it fair now. Because if you're not going to be fair, he's going to make you make it fair. If you don't take the vaccine, they're going to make you take the vaccine. They're going to straighten out all things by making you do it. And these kids don't understand the danger of that.
And what's happening is they're questioning their parents. They're questioning the authority. It wasn't like it was in the 60s, where we were rebelling against authority. We had a very unfavorable war during that time, and everybody was rebelling against. That was the impetus for all the problems in the 60s. But now the rebelling against authority is critical. And that word just keeps on popping up. Think about critical race theory being taught in our schools, and we have no say-so.
Right, and there's no proof that it's all correct. This is a theory from the left of what they're considering. They're saying that the country didn't start in 1776. It started when the first slave arrived in 1619 or whatever, and we have to understand that, and that is the basis of the entire country. Now, there probably is some things in there that we should probably look at as historical fact, but the other side of just, we've chosen one side to tell the story, and we're going to change everything and change the traditions and everything else. Is that what's happening with critical race theory? What is that?
It's an academic discipline. It was formulated back in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. And it was built on the framework of identity-based Marxism. It was regulated for a lot of years in all the universities, but many of the universities. And over this past decade, it's increasingly become the default ideology in our public institutions. It's been injected into government agencies, public school systems, teacher training programs, and even corporate human resource departments in the form of diversity training.
Right. Now let's look at that. You're saying this comes out of Marxist theory.
Yeah.
So it's not coming out of freedom and religion, or freedom of peace and freedom of speech. It's coming from Marxist theory.
Let me give you an example. Now, this is our government, the Treasury Department. They held a training session telling staff members that virtually all white people contribute to racism, and that they must convert everyone in the federal government to the ideology of anti-racism. And this national laboratory, the Sandia National Laboratories, which designs America's nuclear arsenal, they sent white male executives to a three-day re-education camp where they were told that white male culture was analogous to the KKK, white supremacists, and mass killings. The executives were then forced to renounce their white male privilege and write letters of apology to fictitious women and people of color. How insane is that? Well, this is our government, our Treasury Department.
Right. Now you're right. That is systemic through our government now because of the philosophy of the people in charge.
Right. Now, listen to this one. In Cupertino, California, an elementary school forced first graders to deconstruct their racial and sexual identities and rank themselves according to their power and privilege. They don't even know what the hell that means.
Right.
In Springfield, Missouri, a middle school forced teachers to locate themselves on an oppression matrix based on the idea that straight, white, English-speaking Christian males are members of the oppressor class and must atone for their privilege and covert white supremacy. Fifth graders in an elementary school in Philadelphia, they were told they had to celebrate black communism and simulate a black power rally to free 1960s radical, guess who? Angela Davis, a cop killer. Come on.
Now, I'm going to look at this and I'm going to say, it's at its best, what this is an opportunity that people see to say, hey, let's look at the sins of our past, let's learn from them, and let's move forward. What can we make better? But when the way you're describing this, to have people standing up and have to denounce themselves, their own race, and make apologies to people, I don't know. I never heard nobody. Who's going to apologize to me for the bad things that happened in my life? I never did any of those things.
Well, that's just it. You know, I can remember years ago when there was payments made for the fact that certain people had held slaves, their ancestors, and they had to make restitution. And, you know, I thought about that, and I said, those people don't even know the ancestors that they're talking about. And, you know, we didn't do anything to cause that. Why should we have to pay? I commiserate with them. I feel bad about that. I would never have a slave. But, you know, maybe some of my ancestors, even though I'm Italian, I don't think they had slaves in Italy, but I don't know. But the thing is, everybody that was involved in that back then in the 1800s or even as late as the early 1900s, they had difficulty making ends meet, and so they indentured themselves. And at the time, that was a good thing. They were being paid, but they had to work for a certain amount of time to pay it off, and then they got it taken advantage of. And I mean, it's such an involved thing, slavery.
Right. If we go back, slavery is an abomination on humanity.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely a horrible thing. And I liked something that you said there. You said you can commiserate with the people whose families were slaves. I can too. I look at it and my heart breaks to think about the poor people that were slaves. Imagine their families being broken up. I mean, I would fight for them. I would have fought for them on the side of the North to crush the back of slavery. I would do that today. Because that's wrong. It's absolutely wrong. But I don't have any connection to it. I never did it. I never did anything to anybody. I couldn't vote one way or another to stop it. But I do feel bad for people back then. You're Italian, right? My family's Italian and this and that. There was a time when they said Italians need not apply. Well, who do I go to and say, that wasn't right? That probably cost some jobs.
Sure.
Right? They probably held Italian people down for a long time, and it happened to the Irish and it happened to everybody. The problem we have is that, and I got to give my daughter credit again. She's really a brilliant young woman. She's trying really hard to understand the world and learn from me as I learn from her. When she talks about, she says, Dad, you don't even understand what white privilege is. The things you take for granted, other people cannot function within that world because you just take it for granted. That's how the world is. And you say, well, why can't everybody just get that and move on? And you know what? I understand that. There is a difference for people when they show up somewhere. You are at certain kinds of disadvantages, and I understand that. And advantage, disadvantage I might not be at as a white male. I get that. If I walk in somewhere, I might be seen differently than someone of a different race. It's not right, and I understand it. But how do I denounce myself? Because that's the construct society has built. I can talk against it and say it's wrong, but I didn't do anything to make that happen. You know, I understand that that's not right for people, and I don't want it to go on for them. I want everyone to be seen as an individual. I think Dr. Martin Luther King, right? The content of our character, not the color of our skin, is what should guide. And I know that that's not the reality in the world, that there's still a long way to go. But how does attacking a guy like me, a regular guy like me, as though I did something wrong? I can't help if you're attacking me. What did I do wrong? How about all the things that were done wrong to me? Who do I tell? Got to fix that, right? Mm-hmm. So this is where, and this was my point earlier, is that how much of this attack can people who have good hearts, trying to do the right thing, want to change the system, want to help people rise up, how much beating are they going to take and punishment are they going to take for things they didn't do before they just say, you know what? I don't care what happens anymore. Just leave me alone. I'm out of it. Mm-hmm. That's indifference, I think, is probably worse than anything else.
I remember years ago, during the 60s, I was involved in a lot of political stuff, and I can remember a black guy saying to me, we had this political argument, you know, and I said, well, what did I ever do wrong? He said, simply, you're guilty of being white. I said, but I had no choice in that. I had no choice in that. You know, I can't change the past. I can only help change the future. And what I need is for you to help me do that.
Right.
I can't do it alone.
See, I could see what you said earlier is the people who actually held slaves, they were guilty.
Absolutely.
And their plantations and their property should have been chopped up and distributed amongst the people that they held as slaves. Absolutely. That should have been reparations from those rich people who held them to the people that were held, because that was wrong and that should have been their punishment. But going forward, I understand that people probably did, well, not probably, they definitely didn't have the same opportunities because of slavery, how it played out in our country. And it can take hundreds of years for that dissipates.
No.
And I understand it. But holding people today responsible for what happened well, years before your birth, when you had nothing to do with it, that's not going to help bring us together. That's not going to help bring us together. That's going to cause a schism. And that's going to hurt the cause of justice that we all want.
Back then, the slaves were an economic workforce, and the economy was driven on slavery because of the cotton industry and all that. But it evolved into an entire industry that had to depend on slavery. It would have destroyed the South's economy. But when you're talking about being unable to change things, look at what Biden did. The guy that wrote this article that I'm gleaning some of this information from, he wrote a report and it wound up on President Trump's desk. And it was for him to issue an executive order banning this critical race theory-based training programs in the federal government, just in the federal government. President Biden rescinded that order on his very first day in office.
Right. And this is the difference in philosophy. Now, you know, I want to thank you for being here today, Bill. I hope you can start coming back regular and visiting with everybody here in the neighborhood. And you know, you are a good and decent man. And when you were saying about, you know, slavery was the engine of the, I got to say, I would have rather have seen the country fail at that point when they broke up slavery, because it was that wrong. You can't make an economy based on slavery. And it was wrong, and I'm glad that it ended. And I do feel compassionate for my brother and sister Americans whose families suffered that. I do. And I do want to find a way for us all to deal with this in a way that's appropriate for everyone. This whole, now it's our turn to get back at all of you for what happened to our family years and years ago. Mm-hmm. That's a no-win situation. That's not going to have the effect that people think it is, but they feel empowered to do it because they're being used, I think. The politicians are using it, saying, oh yeah, we're going to do this for you, we're going to do it. Well, look at what we're doing. We're going to make finally all this right. And they're not. They're just going to take advantage of them. They're just going to use them. And at the end, we're not going to be in a better place. And we need to be in a better place as Americans. Listen, my friends, we're coming to the end here of this episode of Chasing Justice. And I'm glad we had a chance to talk a little bit about this. This is a difficult topic. This is not easy to figure out. But the bottom line is, the more love we have, the better off we are, the more understanding we have on all sides is our best chance to come to some kind of an agreement and solution, how we go forward all together, hand in hand, into an American future, one of freedom and liberty and justice for all. Socialism is not going to work, and pitting each other at each other's throats is not going to work either.
Amen.
So remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. This is Lieutenant Joe for Chasing Justice. We'll see you down the road.